People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. Now, for 2 weeks only, the words and music of those titan composers, Leonard Bernstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Stephen Sondheim, will be at the Theatre on the Bay with the gentleman Jonathan Rocksmith and Louis Zornheimer. Louis Zornheimer is my guest on People of Note this week. Louis is a well-known music director, and in fact, at the moment, we've caught him just between tours of Evita, because Evita is touring the East at the moment. He's come home briefly for the show, which is called Lenny, Andrew, Steve and Me. And when that show's finished, the Theatre on the Bay closes down for a major refurbishment. Louis, welcome. I'm so glad I got hold of you while you were here briefly.
Yes, hello. It's good to be here.
And this show opened on the 10th of April. It's a short run, isn't it, till the 21st? And it is a kind of a stopgap in a sense, isn't it, without putting it down?
Yes, it's Peter wanted something to close the theatre with, I suppose. I don't know if we are the last show, but we finish on the 21st. We fly out on the 22nd already to Taiwan. So we had a short while here in Cape Town. Jonathan's also quite busy, quite thinly spread. So I think this was the only 2 weeks that could really fit into his calendar. But then the Theatre on the Bay is closing for a massive refurbishment, as you said.
Yes.
I think it sort of goes hand in hand with marking its 30th anniversary, and okay. This is with a view to the next 30 years.
It's amazing that it's been going for 30 years, isn't it, that little theatre, which is such a delight. I presume you enjoy working there because it's got a wonderful nostalgic charm, but it also is quite intimate for this sort of show that you're doing now.
Yes, absolutely, but it's also such a pleasure because you're working right next to the beach.
Yes, of course.
It's really rare to work at a place where you're driving into the sunset when you go to work at night. It's really quite incredible.
Tell me, Louis, a little bit about this. I've just said in the introduction that it features the music of Leonard Bernstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Stephen Sondheim. How has it been put together, or how did it come about?
I have to say it was mainly due to conversations between Peter Turin and Jonathan Rocksmith. I think these three composers are very close to Peter's heart, so I think he requested them. And Jonathan chose the material. Obviously, he had to choose stuff that would suit his voice. But he did a very clever job of it, making beautiful medleys out of the music of all three composers, few single songs standing on their own, sometimes music that even I hadn't heard before, because Jonathan, I think, knows way more about musical theatre than I do. And yes, it's actually really lovely. It's a really beautiful selection of the whole catalogue of these three composers' works. But also, I think it makes you walk out and want to hear more. Especially, I all of a sudden got an interest again in listening to Bernstein's work again. Especially because I know some of the classical stuff quite well, but to go and listen to the whole musical theatre oeuvre is a completely different kettle of fish, and beautiful stuff.
Does the show have a sort of a narrative? Does it tell a story, or is it just really celebrating the music?
There is a thread that runs through. Jonathan was really clever. He looked at the structure of the musical. What is the structure of a musical? From the overture right through act one to the 11 o'clock number and then the end. I don't want to give too much away because it's actually quite an interesting journey. It's quite an interesting journey, but it was news to me as well.
But I read somewhere in the publicity for the show that Peter Turin has very purposely asked for the stage to be very bare, just have a piano on, and something about opening it up so he can get the audience to see almost backstage or something.
Absolutely. You see right through to the back wall of the stage with everything. There's a little mirror that's still left. The mirror is there for actors to look at their hair before they go onto stage. You see a fire extinguisher. You literally see the skeleton of the stage. Actually really quite lovely. Really beautiful. It's haunting. And everything all of a sudden, even the piano, which is a baby grand, which usually stands in Peter's office, just looks so small on the stage. And it usually, I think of the Theatre on the Bay as quite a small, intimate theatre, but that stage is actually quite big. I think it's a beautiful visual to say goodbye to Theatre on the Bay too.
As we know it at the moment.
Yes.
Well, I don't know, are you able to talk, and we can talk about it later, what will be happening to the theatre? I know there's a school that's going to be built there, added on, but we can talk about that in a short while. But your role as the pianist in this, was it purely you came along to be the pianist, you didn't have anything to do with the structure of the show.
No, nothing. It was actually quite delightful to sit back and let Jonathan do all the work. Jonathan did the arrangements, he did the transpositions where they had to happen, etc. Really cleverly done. You know, he's done quite a bit of work with Brian Schimmel on this wonderful musical theatre show. I don't even know what the name is that they do in Johannesburg with a full orchestra. And I think there's a very nice flavour of some of the type of arrangements that he and Brian had been doing that also is used. I mean, the flavour is used in this. Jonathan obviously does his own arrangements here. But yeah, it was quite lovely to just sit back and let Jonathan come up with a structure and the choice of program.
Because you have been rather busy, haven't you, Lou?
Yes.
I mean, you've been with Evita now for quite a few months as music director, and there you really have to keep your wits about yourself, I presume.
Yes, these string productions are interesting because it only if you end up in a place for really long enough do you get to have free time. For instance, now when we were in Singapore, we did so much publicity work for Taiwan and Hong Kong and Japan coming up. So there wasn't much rest for the wicked. And also back now in the short space here, we had auditions for a few musicals coming up. So it's very, very busy. Cape Town 2 days and then Johannesburg 2 days. And in between talking to Jonathan, who's also busy rehearsing shows that are coming in July, etc. So it was quite difficult getting rehearsal time for our Theatre on the Bay show together. But yes, what's interesting, you know, I suppose people have to grab us while we're here as well. Yes. on South African soil to do a bit of work.
So. And that's how you were grabbed also for Find Music Radio. And yes. Now I would like to hear, Louis Zornhammer, your first piece of music, what it is and why you've chosen it.
Yes, I chose a piece by Hildegard von Bingen.
Good heavens, that's going back a bit.
Yes, pretty much to you know, the 1100s. One of my favorite composers. It's from an album called Hortus Deliciarum. And the ensemble that sings it, or sings on this recording, is called Discantus, and they are led by a very, very talented woman called Brigitte Lesner. I actually asked a friend of mine how to pronounce his name because I thought it would be Lesner or something really fancy, but because there's no acute or any other interesting
dots and dashes.
Yes.
Yes.
But this album I bought a number of years ago. This is actually not the first Hildegard von Bingen recording that I fell in love with. When I was at school, we had a membership with the Belleville Library, and they had a record, rather, of Emma Kirkby singing a few Hildegard von Bingen numbers. The album was called A Feather on the Breath of God, and it was the first time that I had heard any of Hildegard von Bingen's music, and I know for a fact that that was also the first recording that actually really put Hildegard von Bingen's music on the map, because before that, I think she had hardly had a mention in any music dictionary. And now people know much more about her. She was a German mystic. She was a Benedictine nun. I think she was subsequently canonized as well, and considered to be almost also the mother of natural sciences in Germany. She lived in the Rhineland region of what was then the Holy Roman Empire. And she was also famous for her visions. Nowadays, of course, people try to write it or put it down to that she maybe was a sufferer of migraines because her visions apparently came with a white flash, etc. The point is, she wrote some incredible music, and more importantly for me, she wrote some incredible liturgical poetry. And this one is actually not a choral piece. It's a single voice a cappella. I think actually that is Brigitte Lesner herself singing. And the poem is so beautiful because it's called O Rubor Sanguinis, which means O Ruby Blood, which flowed from on high where divinity touched. But then this stanza: you are a flower that the winter of the serpent's breath can never touch, which I thought was so beautiful. And pure voice, it's just heartbreakingly beautiful.
hauntingly beautiful music all the way from the 1100s by Hildegard von Bingen, O Rubo Sanguinis. And the choice of my guest here on People of Note this week, Louis Zurnamer, who is a music director and who has worked on many shows and who is currently working with Jonathan Rocksmith on a show, Lenny, Andrew, Steve and Me at the Theatre on the Bay. I wanted to ask you, Louis, you spoke so passionately about that piece of music, and possibly because I associate you with musicals, I sort of don't think of you as a classical music person, but it sounds though you obviously were very well trained classically, and that obviously plays a part in your life, possibly a big part.
Yes, a very big part. In fact, especially with choral music, I think if I could make a playlist of only choral music, we would have sat here for 24 hours.
Really?
I listened to a lot of choral music. I sang in school choirs all my life. I sang in Tigerberg Children's Choir, which was a fantastic experience as a child, of course. And I also then went to D.F. Milan High School, so I sang in Danny Smith's choirs there, which was just wonderful, and learned really some incredible repertoire. And especially being Afrikaans, Danny introduced me to music from the English choral tradition, which I absolutely adore, and in fact, which is, you know, one of the pieces from, which is one of my next choices. But choral music especially plays a big part. I studied piano as well. I went to UCT and I studied with Albie van Schalkwyk and Graham Fitch. So the idea was to become a concert pianist. Things didn't work out that way. I ended up teaching for a while in London and then coming back and starting work on the first production of Phantom of the Opera for Peter Turin, which was probably about 12 or 14 years ago already. And from then onwards, it just became one production after the other. And whenever I could, I try to still sit down at a piano and learn some repertoire. In fact, I'm working on something this year. But it's difficult to just fall back into it, and especially when it's not your bread and butter, because it means that it can't be your focus.
Yes, that's true.
Which is a big pity. But I miss choral singing incredibly. I remember when I came back a few years ago from London, I joined an amateur vocal ensemble that Danny Smith had called Coristi Allegri. In fact, that's where I met one of your colleagues, Otto, because he sang with a choir after me. And it was just so wonderful singing in a choir again. I think that there's something incredibly satisfying about being surrounded with people who sing incredibly well. Mm. And that blend of sound, especially in a sort of chamber choir environment, I absolutely adore it. And it's something I seek out when I go abroad as well, especially to England. I try to hear choirs in cathedral settings. It's anyway one of my favorite things is liturgical music, liturgical art. I think I could travel around the cathedrals of Europe for the rest of my life and be very happy.
That's a side of you that I think a lot of people might not know.
No, probably not.
When they
not.
See you in the pit or on the stage. Because as music director, here comes a naive question. I think I know the answer, but you're not necessarily playing, are you? You're basically conducting.
Yes.
Or are there times when you are sort of conducting from the keyboard?
It depends on what the show is. You know, on something like Singing in the Rain, there was a bit of keyboard conducting. We have a show coming up at the end of the year that has quite a lot of keyboard conducting. I didn't do Annie, but Annie has a lot of keyboard conducting in it. So it depends on the show. I think because Peter Turin has presented a lot of the Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, they are generally not piano conductor scores. I did Cats last year in Korea. That's a purely conducting job. Phantom is a conducting job. Evita now is a conducting job. And thank goodness, because they're pretty stressful conducting jobs for many reasons. Generally in musical theater, it's a mixture of, I suppose, musical challenges, but also it's the technical side of stuff, you know, whether it's pressing a button here or firing a click there or... You know, there's quite a lot of variables in musicals to handle.
But now, with all that experience with musicals, would you ever be able to have a bash at conducting an orchestra or a choir, conducting choral music?
When it gets to an orchestra, I don't know. I think that was one of the reasons I went to UCT originally, because it has an opera school, and I wanted to go into opera conducting. I suppose I end up in something... a little different from that. Still same sort of personalities and the same sort of environment. It's essentially a theatre environment. I think I would find incredibly interesting. Choral conducting I've often thought of, but then you would have to be based somewhere, which is of course not the nature of my job currently. You would have to be based somewhere where you can give honest attention to a group of musicians, whether it's once or twice a week. Yes, I recently spoke to a friend of mine who, in fact I know three people who teach at the St. Paul's Cathedral School in London, which is an interesting place. The one is the maths teacher and is now, I think, the deputy head there. Jakob Brandt, his name is, Afrikaans guy from here, also from a choral background, and a friend of mine, Neil de Prier, who's a classical pianist, who's actually out in South Africa this week to visit his family. He teaches piano there, and then we were at a wedding last week where one of the guys who played trumpet is now one of the teachers. But I think it must be an incredibly interesting environment to work in, you know, the, yes. where choir is actually the main focus, and those kids have to learn a huge amount of repertoire every week for the liturgical mass and for Vespers and everything that has to happen throughout the church's calendar. And then, of course, they have to do their normal schoolwork and still pass maths and science.
Hmm. But what a different world from your, dare I say, glitz and glamour of a show like Evita or yes. Phantom, although, which is very glitzy and glamorous, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose seems more glitzy and glamorous from the outside. It's you know, when true. You're touring, you can't really have the wild party life that I think, you know, Hollywood wants, you know, theatre to look like. Because I always find it quite interesting that people in theatre are generally quite boring, because dancers can't go out because they injure themselves. Singers can't go out and get drunk because then they can't sing the next day. So it's generally actually musicians who party.
And conductors.
Well.
Louis Zornama, what's your next piece of music?
Well, since we spoke about choir music, this is a piece by Paul Meller called Ubi Caritas, which is a famous Latin text from the Catholic Church. But this specific piece of music, as I say, written by Paul Meller, who's a Welsh composer, but who's a lecturer at University of Aberdeen, where I imagine he would have met Will and Kate.
Oh, yes.
And this
possibly.
Piece of music was written for the royal wedding. It's just also one of my favorite pieces. It's sung by a choir called Tenebre. Their director is Nigel Short, who used to be part of the King Singers. I think they're one of my favorite choirs. People should definitely look out for their recordings. I think I also own a Rachmaninoff Vespers that they perform, but this is just an incredibly beautiful piece of choral music, typical of the English choir tradition.
Thank you.
Well, that's music by Paul Miller, sung by the group Tenebrae, Ubi Caritas, and the choice of Louis Zurnamer, who's my guest on this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. Louis is working with Jonathan Rocksmith in a short run at the Theatre on the Bay, Lenny, Andrew, Steve and Me, covering the music of Leonard Bernstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim, before the Theatre on the Bay closes to have some refurbishments done. But we were having a good chat just now, Louis, about classical music and choral music, and about the glitz and glamour of being in a pit with a big show with lights and microphones and all the rest of it. And the other thing is, do you work with similar musicians all the time, or is each of your shows you've got to get used to a new orchestra, new people, new sort of ways of playing, and you've got to rehearse and get them in line?
When we travel the shows, we generally take a core group of musicians along. So I might take along two or three keyboard players, a drum player, bass player, etc. So then those are people that become the constant. But we pick up a new orchestra in every city. So that usually requires a new rehearsal period everywhere. The only place where we toured with the same group of musicians was in China, just because we were running from city to city, and I think with translation and stuff, it was going to prove to be quite difficult. And that's still a reality of especially working in the East, is that, for instance, last year with Cat's rehearsals in Korea, everything takes three times longer because you're working with a translator.
Oh,
nice. So yes. Every correction that you make, every tempo adjustment, everything, you work with a translator who also doesn't speak music, as it were. So you can't just throw in an Italian musical term and expect them to translate it. So it's quite an interesting process. But there's also the work ethic in each country is slightly different. I mean, look, it's interesting, speaking of Italian, anywhere in the world you can say an Italian musical term to a musician, especially if they come from a classical background, and they will instantly know what it is. It's quite incredible. But people have a different working tempo. People, obviously, some countries have unions involved, etc. So it's very careful planning around the whole rehearsal process, and especially in that original tech week when the hours are so long and we have to rehearse with an orchestra in the pit. There's a lot of sitting around, a lot of patience, a lot of humor is required.
Hearing you say humor, are you tough? Are you a tough conductor?
No, I think I'm quite patient.
Okay.
I think so. I think it's one of my strengths.
Do you use a baton?
I do. It depends on the show. Sometimes the pits are too short, the lip of the pit, and then you can't use a baton. And also, if the group of musicians is too small, then it feels odd to stand there with a stick. At the moment, for instance, Evita isn't particularly huge. It only has 9 people, because it's one of those typical bus and truck versions, big enough to pack up and move. And it just feels odd to stand there with a stick. Sometimes it helps if the layout is very big and makes the visual, especially for stage, easier. But also sometimes a stick is misread, because generally we conduct onto camera. Because nowadays people watch, instead of looking down to the pit, they look at a TV screen on the gallery, for example, on the dress circle.
I've noticed that, even here at Landscape.
And often with a stick on the camera just looks like a stripy blur, I think.
So it's not grand opera.
No.
Yet. I hope they don't do that to opera. But with a show like Evita, I mean, it seems you've been lucky to work on really good shows musically. I've always thought, for example, I don't know what you think, but I've always thought that Evita, for me, is Andrew Lloyd Webber's masterpiece. It's the most, I find it the most musically interesting and satisfying.
Yes, he certainly has quite a lot of avant-garde aspects. Mm. And it sounds like avant-garde 20th century music, quite a lot of it. I, from a conductor's point of view, I enjoyed Phantom the most, just because it's almost like an opera, I suppose, the closest I ever got to conducting an opera.
Yes.
Not that it is an opera. And then I love Sunset Boulevard. I think just because it's slightly over the top and the story is quite interesting and these fantastic melodies and the original movie is so wonderful. So I've had quite a long love relationship with Sunset Boulevard. I think that's my favorite one.
And you've conducted it, have you?
Yes, well, we did a small bonsai version in Theatre on the Bay with Angela Killian as Norma Desmond and Jonathan. It was fantastic. I loved doing that production.
Very well. We're going to have another piece of music now. So what are you going to wax lyrical about next, Louis?
Well, something slightly different. Some indie folk music. Some might not consider it to be fine music. I quite like this band. They're called Kings of Convenience. They're from Norway. And it's from an album called Quiet is the New Loud, which I quite like as a motto in a very loud word. And it's called Summer on the West Hill. Summer on the West Hill. And I chose it because it ends with a particularly beautiful piece of almost mantra at the end of the song that says, "Please, ocean cloud, let there be no storm on the crossing below." And they repeat that, and it's just so gorgeous. So even if you don't like the song, at least listen to the end.
From my seat, I see the fields move by. Car starts, it's been a long, long time. It's the first time I see summer in the west hill. I lean back and then my eyes just go floating where they want to flow. They seem to take to the horizon.
Of Convenience and a piece called Summer on the West Hill. Probably the first time that's been out here on Fine Music Radio. Louis Zonam is my guest. We're talking about musical theatre, and as you've heard, Louis has been a musical director on many of the great shows that have been on at Theatre on the Bay and here at Artscape. And now he's working in an intimate setting with Jonathan Rocksmith on a show called Lenny, Andrew, Steve and Me, which has just opened at Theatre on the Bay and runs until the 21st of April, and then the Theatre on the Bay closes down. I wanted to ask you, Louis, it's not closing down, but it's been closed for a while for renovations, and we said what a lovely theatre it is. They're not going to change it. Can you give anything away?
I think I can, without being arrested. I think, firstly, Peter brought in a fantastic architect. I think he used actually one of Cameron Mackintosh's architects, I think, to assist in just artistic ideas for the rebuilding of Theatre on the Bay. I don't think they're changing it too much because it's also a historic building, as far as I know. But the main reason why they're refurbishing is firstly because it's 30th anniversary and Peter likes to give things a bit of a makeover. But also because they're opening a school. He, Anton Leighton, and Duane Alexander are opening a musical theatre academy, which is really exciting. Anton and Duane have been doing their musical theatre workshops all over the world for the past number of years. And they've also been the resident director and resident choreographer on so many of these musicals that we've had here, that they have worked with some of the best directors and choreographers and musical directors in the world. And now they're opening the school. I think it's incredibly exciting.
And is this something that Peter Turin has sort of sponsored? He is giving them the opportunity to have a school where the Theatre on the Bay is. But then is he building something there? Because there's not much space there.
They're going up.
Oh, I see.
They're going up, and I don't think they're building an extra floor, but they're certainly extending what is now known as the Bill Flynn Room, and there's currently a gym. If the patrons would know it as the floor above the restaurant.
Okay.
And that floor is being extended all the way back to the back of the stage wall. So it will actually make for quite a big floor
space.
Because
it'll be right over the theatre, in fact.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, I see. And then we must talk to Anton and Duane about this. I must, actually. But is it then, apparently they are being very successful. They've turned out some people that have actually gone on to be in these musicals.
Yes, absolutely. And they have a massive database. So many really young children. And of course, they've been in charge of training all the children for shows like Annie, especially Sound of Music. They've done, I think, 1,000 times, and they do a fantastic job of it. They just have endless patience with these kids. They're born teachers, really. Honestly, they're great friends of mine. I think they are born teachers. I couldn't believe in two people more to do something like this, honestly.
Oh, there you go. Gosh. So, as they say, watch the space, or
yes,
that space. I know last week there was an article about that very project in Die Burger, the newspaper. But back to you and the play. Working with Jonathan Rocksmith must be quite a challenge and a joy, and maybe even frustrating, because, you know, he's done so much and is continuing to do so much. We can't deny that he's unbelievably good in whatever he tackles.
Oh, my goodness,
but
yes.
I wonder what he's like to work with. And you might not be honest, but he must be quite exacting, surely. He said, laughing nervously,
No, Jonathan knows his repertoire really well. That's the one thing where I often can't keep up. I think he will appreciate me saying this. He's a real musical theatre nerd. And I think that's why he and Emma, our leading lady in Evita, get along so well, because they both know so much about musical theatre. That is their absolute biggest love in the world, where I freely admit to the fact that I listen to classical music. I don't listen to musical theatre at home much at all. And Jonathan's knowledge of musical theatre and the amount that he reads about musical theatre. And, you know, sometimes you walk into his dressing room and he's building a little set of, you know, a small miniature set of some theatre in New York or in Paris. So there's a genuine love of the repertoire, of the composers, of theatre life as such. And he is so busy. When he's not doing musical theatre, he is busy with his own one-man shows. He keeps on writing and directing stuff and churning them out. He's then on a plane to Durban, then on a plane to Johannesburg, then on a plane to Port Elizabeth. So he keeps busy, and he's a prime example of the fact that you can make a living out of musical theatre. You just have to generate the work yourself, which is something that I have never done. I've always relied on the goodwill of people like Peter Turin to keep me employed, which is incredible. I mean, I've been incredibly lucky. But Jonathan would survive. He honestly would. So it's not, there's no story there of the suffering artist. He is a man, he's a business. It's like somebody like Alan Committee, you know, they...
That's a good example.
Yeah,
that's another good example.
And they really, really...
And you have to be good. You have to be good.
You have to be good. You can't, you know, put a load of nonsense on stage, because people won't return.
Yes.
And that's the thing that Jonathan is, he's managed to make a return audience for himself. But if I just think this week, I can't believe how full the theatre has been. I mean, I can believe it because it's Jonathan, but it is also honestly, it is because of Jonathan that a show like this sells out, because you put his name behind something.
And you are there, Louis. Come on, let's face it. You've been with Jonathan in a number of his smaller shows. I remember the one about Donald Swan.
Flanders and Swan, the hats off show that he did. Right, yes, that was lovely.
So you're obviously used to working with him as well. You know his temperament. He knows your... Do you ever sit down at the piano together, piano four hands, or is that also a secret?
No, we actually don't.
Not in the show. Okay.
I can't keep up.
Really. Louis, let's have another choice. And I see we've got opera coming
up. Yes, finally, because that's actually my big love. I have to say, opera and my friends in opera are very dear people to me. I'm absolutely obsessed with voices. And this aria is from quite an unknown Puccini opera called Le Villi, which is... basically what it says a similar story to Giselle, the ballet. It was his first stage work. It was written for a competition. It's only about 62 minutes long. It's a one-act opera. This aria is from Act One, sung by the character called Anna. She sings it, I think, straight after her wedding to her lover who's leaving to go fetch an inheritance in Mainz. It takes place in the Black Forest, and it's called Se Come Voi Piccina, and it's about not wanting to be forgotten, sung by Kirita Kanawa.
An aria from a little-known Puccini opera, an early opera, Le Villi, and Se Come Vo Piccina, and the choice of Louis Zornammer. And there we heard Dame Kirita Kanawa, who sadly has retired, but what an amazing career. Do you agree, Louis?
Absolutely. Incredible singer. What a beautiful voice. And
you
from
said
the beautiful
you love,
New Zealand.
Yes, you said you love a voice. Does that mean both the operatic voice and the sort of voice that's used in music theatre?
Yes, but specifically the operatic voice, and I listen to quite a lot of Lieder, actually, so I like sopranos. Sopranos and mezzos particularly I like listening to a lot, probably more than after that, probably baritones and basses, then tenors.
Tenors right at the bottom. That makes a nice change, because everyone's so mad about tenors
yes.
all the time. And so when you, I mean, you do a lot of traveling, as you've said, at the moment you're involved in this long tour. I mean, we've long forgotten about Evita
yes.
from last year, but you're still very involved with it, and it's still going on for a while, isn't it?
Yeah, still going. We're still going to Taiwan, we're going to Hong Kong, and then we are going to Tokyo, which is just the most exciting news. That was one of the big drawing cards of this contract, because 5 weeks in Japan.
Yes.
Just incredible. Can't wait.
And then do you come back and relax a bit, or do you go straight into another show?
We go pretty much straight into rehearsals for another show.
Okay. And I know you're not going to tell us because it's a secret. But we'll hear you and see you in the pit here at Artscape, I gather, in
yes.
a not too distant future.
I think around Christmas. I'm sure okay. we'll be here then. Yeah.
And so when you do get a chance like this, here you've got a break from Evita, and now you plunged into the show with Jonathan Rocksmith. Mm. Don't you find it all rather exhausting? Because you've proved in the course of this interview that it's not just all glitz and glamour of these shows. We, the audience, go there for 2 hours, mm-hmm. enjoy an amazing experience. But what's gone on behind, before, during, and afterwards is something we just don't know about. So you must be exhausted.
Cape Town at least, you know, feeds one's spirit a little bit. Yeah, because it's beautiful and there are wonderful wine farms here, and my family is here if I get to see them, when I get to see them. So it's not too bad, I have to say. I think it definitely there's something just about being at home.
Yes.
And as I say, especially, you know, one of my big loves, I'm incredibly passionate about food and wine. So Cape Town always does the trick for me.
Indeed. Can you cook?
I can, and we actually don't get a lot of time to cook abroad because we generally don't stay in self-catering places. So when I do get home, and interestingly, the more I get home, the more I feel like having a braai.
Constantly.
Really? Like, so especially one of my very good soprano friends, Hanley Lowe, who you might know,
Arby
Lowe's brother's child. Loki Lowe was her father. Is one of our favorite braai friends. So when we're up in Johannesburg, we have a braai.
And I presume going around to places like Japan and Thailand and all that, do you sample the local cuisine as much as you can?
Oh, absolutely. Especially now they've started doing, Michelin has a guide out. They're not star rated restaurants necessarily. They could be a canteen that serves only laksa, for example, in Singapore, but they will have a Michelin rating. So even though you might still just pay $5 for the bowl, which I suppose a lot in but not much there, you are eating fantastic food. So it's a great way you can, you know, peruse the internet and see where you want to go eat. It's a fantastic way to get to know a place, is to do food traveling. That's pretty much the way I like to go about it.
All right. Well, we're coming towards the end of our program now, Louis. And just let me remind our listeners that this show, which has a very short run, it ends on the 21st, that's on Saturday, is called Lenny, Andrew, Steve and Me, the music of Leonard Bernstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim, with Jonathan Rocksmith and my guest Louis Zornammer as the pianist. And it's on at the Theatre on the Bay before the theatre closes down for massive renovations, as you've also heard. So I'm glad we caught you, Louis, in time, and thank you for being so interesting about the magical world of conducting and being down there in the pit. And tell me about your last piece, because let me just say you've chosen one of my favorite composers.
Good, yes.
Vaughan, so you're allowed Williams. To come again.
I think lots of people know him for, of course, the Fantasia on Thales and the Green Sleeves, etc. But this one's from a lesser-known work called the Fantasy Quintet. It's the third movement, Alla Sarabanda. Very reminiscent of Tudor music. It was written in 1912. It's just beautiful.
You've had a fantastic choice of music, I have to say. So, Lou Zernheimer, thank you, as we listen to the part of the Fantasy Quintet by Ralph Vaughan Williams. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Before Theatre on the Bay closes for an extraordinary renovation, join me, Jonathan Rocksmith, for 2 weeks only with Lenny, Andrew, Steve and me, an intimate evening showcasing the music and lyrics of Leonard Bernstein, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim, the gentlemen who reinvented musical theatre. Accompanied by renowned conductor Louis Zernheimer and featuring the Theatre on the Bay stage as you've never seen it before. The show runs from the 10th to the 21st of April, and bookings are through CompuTicket or the Theatre Box office on 021-438-3301.